prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Thursday, February 22nd, 2024. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Melody. How are you today?
Better, better, better. Thank you.
Oh, well, that's glad to hear it. Glad
yes.
You do sound... Slightly clearer in your...
Well, I hope so. That was pretty rough.
Nasal area. Yes, yes.
That was pretty rough, and I shouldn't make the listeners listen to that, but...
They're hardcore.
Yeah.
They've been listening to you for over 25 years. I think they...
I think they've gotten used to me by now.
Cut you a little slack, yes.
My once a year...
Fall from grace, health.
Yeah.
Hey, happy National Chili, Sweet Potato, and Margarita Day.
How about that? I love sweet potatoes. Sweet potato fries. You can't beat them.
Couldn't decide among them, so I thought it would be appropriate to celebrate all three. I'm making sweet potato skins topped with chili and sharing a margarita with my wife for dinner. Enough said.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Really?
Absolutely.
I do like chili and sweet potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. I'm how far away from? No, I'm too. Okay. Let's go ahead.
We'll meet you halfway.
Okay. Let's go ahead and see what the markets have done today. Just crazy. Great day for all of those with paper. The Dow was up a little over 1%. 456 points. The S&P was up 100 points, 2%, and the NASDAQ was up almost 3%. But I got sidetracked a little there. Let's go to the gold and silver markets first. So gold, pretty much flat, 2,034. Silver was down less than a half of a percent, $22.78. Platinum was up 17, almost 2% at 906. Palladium was up $21 at $977. Now we'll go to the paper markets. I did tell you those. I know you're going to talk about it, but you know what? Here you have the NASDAQ up almost 3% by one stock. Fueled by one stock.
Indeed. Indeed. I wrote about it in this week's newsletter, talked about it on Tuesday.
It's crazy.
The core of the Magnificent Seven skewing the markets like it hasn't been skewed in several decades.
Yeah, and you're right. The Magnificent Seven, and that's what's moving these markets. So what if you're not in those seven? You know, but anyway, European markets, they were all positive overnight. Asia, I think, was the same. Shanghai, China was up by 1.25%. 10-year yield right now is unchanged at 4.32. Oil was up 55 cents at $78.46. Natural gas was down another, almost 3%, 1.72 for natural gas. And that's pretty much it today for the markets. And where are we going to first, Dave? Oh, you have City.
Well, yeah, I mean, hey, why not start off with some good prognostication from the too big to fails about our precious metals market?
Yeah, gold prices, they're talking about, Citi's talking about it's going to hit 3,000 this year or next year, which would be the end of this year. And oil will be back up to $100. And so that's a $1,000 move for gold. And this is all according to Citi's North America head of commodities research. The most likely wild card path to 3,000 is a rapid acceleration of an existing but slow moving trend, de-dollarization across emerging markets, central banks, that in turn leads to a crisis of confidence in the U.S. dollar. Now, this could double central banks' gold purchases, challenging jewelry consumption as the largest driver of gold demand, Doshi believes. This is Doshi. He is the analyst. Akash Doshi, Citi's North American head of commodities. China and Russia's central banks are leading the gold purchases. You have India, Turkey, and Brazil. They're also increasing bullion buying. World central banks have sustained two successive years of more than 1,000 tons of net gold purchases. This was reported in January. All we need is another little trigger that's going to move it to 3,000, and that's just the beginning. And and they're talking about a deep global recession to where the Federal Reserve would have to cut interest rates. And so that means the brakes have been cut not to 3%, but to 1% or lower. And that will take us to 3,000, he warns. And gold prices tend to share an inverse relationship with interest rates. And I think a lot of that, I'm going to talk a little bit more about that when we get to Japan, when we start talking about Japan, Dave.
Yeah. Yeah, stagflation. Certainly another big potential trigger. You know, gold's perceived as a safe haven that tends to perform well in periods of economic uncertainty like we've had the past few years, up and down, of course, but it's when investors move away from riskier assets like stocks. In any event, regardless of these triggers, Citi thinks their base case for gold is a new price, record price of $21.50 sometime this year. And I guess they expect the big boom to occur next after the Fed presumably lowers rates at least three times more and more steeply, of course, if there's a big recession. So see what happens. I mean, another one is oil to hit $100 a barrel. We're not close to that yet, but certainly could head in that direction quickly if this Israel-Hamas war eventually hits production. More than likely indirectly, but perhaps directly as a result of the potential wider bombing, which seems to be the preferred MO of countries and rebels fighting each other these days. Russian oil supplies. There's a risk there if Ukraine should happen to attack Russian refineries with drones. That can't be ruled out. But in any event, a lot of things potentially in the offing. We'll see where the next few months take us.
Well, you know, sales of previously owned homes, that kind of had an uptick in January, mainly by the easing mortgage rates. And there was a modest pickup in the supply of properties on the market. You had the existing home sales that rose 3.1% last month from December to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 4 million. This is all from the National Association of Realtors. Now, this is the strongest sales pace since August, and it is slightly higher than the 3.98 million sales pace that these economists were expecting. So it's modest. And but compare it with January of 2023, sales fell 1.7%. So, you know, so it's still lower than a year ago. And existing home sales sank to nearly a 30-year low. And that tumbled almost 19% from 2022. So, you know, again, with the pickup in sales, it's going to push these home prices, push them up a little bit. And for the seventh month in a row. So, and we saw the national median sales price rise 5.1% from January of last year, Dave.
$379,000 over that now. Highest in records going back, well, for January anyway, going back to 1999. And for the first time in over a year, the median home sale price outpaced the 4.5% annual gain in wage growth that was recorded last month on an annualized basis. You know, you got a whole bunch of factors tying in here leading to a prolonged recession in that industry, something that politicians and mainstream media just don't like to characterize it as, but in fact, that's what we're seeing. Now, the cost of financing a home has come down slightly from its October peak when rates basically hit just shy of 8%, but they climbed back to a 10-week high last week. Not sure where that is, in the, probably in the 6%, 6.5% range perhaps. And that's still making keeping particularly younger and first-time buyers out of that that market just because they can't afford it. In any event, that's where we are in the depressed housing industry. I mean, I hate to characterize it as depressed because, you know, national sales prices close to 400,000. It's like, what? But they're just... a lot of people just can't get into it, and home builders continue to fret.
Fret they do. Fret they do.
I like fret.
Do you like fret?
I like
fretting.
Fret.
They're fretting?
I think it reminds me of Fred Flintstones, who I think was among life's biggest fretters.
At least the earliest.
Indeed.
Well, you know, it's jobless claims Thursday. That fell again to 201,000 for the week ending February of 17th. The four-week average of claims, a less volatile measure, fell by 3,500. Blah, 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 blah. Many economists expect the rapid rates hikes to weaken the labor market, and but that hasn't happened, Dave. So they tell us.
Yeah, I mean, last month's job gain over 350,000, roughly twice what economists had predicted, even topping December's large upwardly revised number anyway of 333K. And though layoffs remain at low levels, there's been an uptick in job cuts recently across particularly tech and media. Google parent company Alphabet, eBay, TikTok, Snap, and the LA Times all recently announcing big layoffs. Cisco last week announced it was cutting 4,000 jobs out of, what, their 85,000 internationally. And in total, 1.86 million Americans were collecting some form of jobless benefit during the week that ended February 10th, a decrease of 27,000 from the previous week. So the latest CPI and the latest jobless claims numbers not making Fed policymakers the doves who want to cut rates earlier than later happy.
You know, this next report kind of, one part of it made me chuckle, but and it's about the hourly workers, how they are working less than before the COVID pandemic. And I guess this is from the ADP Research Institute. And it talks about how it's been reshaped since 2019. And the median weekly hours worked fell to 37.7 in December of 2023 from 38.4 in 2019. So you're looking at about a 2% decline. Now, these experts, these are experts now. They don't know why exactly the numbers moved. But they think that the data offers some clues. This is the one that cracks me up. Higher wages likely made it possible for some people to work less. So you're out there wanting to work and harder to get a higher wage, only so you can take more time off. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, really?
Sure.
That's so funny. That's
some people. Some people, I guess. I'd like to see the income breakdown of those people. So I can't believe that you know, any of the working poor view that. I mean, many anyway.
You wouldn't think, but even for experts to come up with that one, it kind of makes you like, really? Because usually in our world, in the real world, for a higher wage, you usually have to work a little bit harder and longer. That's what motivates.
I think things have changed since the pandemic.
Work smarter, not harder. But you know what? In the real world.
Well, this is the real world.
And it depends.
I don't know that we can differentiate between you know, where these people are working. And, you know, other industries. I mean, it's all part of the real world. It's just, you know, what that world comprises, I think.
Or is it the higher wages that people were forced to pay resulted in less hours? You know, because businesses have to cut back some way in order to justify the higher wages.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, sure.
So that's probably more likely than, you know, saying, hey, I'm making a buck more, so I don't have to work 38 hours anymore. I can only, I'll call in sick more often and only work 30, you know, so I don't know.
Well, hourly workers, I mean, there's probably, I'm sure there's some of that, but it's also, I mean, I can, you know, point to my own daughter's situation, you know, where they work on slim margins, as do most small businesses. And, you know, if business is down in a particular quarter, you know, they just offer less hours to these hourly workers. You know, I'm not sure how in the aggregate it's tied to higher wages. I'm sure that has had an impact. In some workplaces. No, I mean, I don't know how it couldn't. This particular article is suggesting, well, a lot of these employers decided to hold on to more employees, you know, as the pandemic was winding down because of how many they had lost it in the early part of it during the crazy shutdowns. And now, particularly in big tech, you're seeing, I mean, it's some of it. I mean, you're just seeing all these big, or a lot of these big companies shedding thousands of workers now. And, well, it turns out that some of that, if not a lot, is due to the higher wages they've been paying.
Oh. All right, I hear the music. That means we're heading into a break. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE talkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. We got some great prices coming in. And
1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. We got some great prices coming in. And people are really shopping my prices. Even I can always tell when other dealers are shopping my price. Because it was funny. I had actually made a mistake. I was quoting this guy today, Dave. And I was off by 60 cents. GScoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. We got some great prices coming in. And people are really shopping my prices. Even I can always tell when other dealers are shopping my price. Because it was funny. I had actually made a mistake. I was quoting this guy today, Dave. And I was off by 60 cents. GScoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. We got some great prices coming in. And people are really shopping my prices. Even I can always tell when other dealers are shopping my price. Because it was funny. I had actually made a mistake. I was quoting this guy today, Dave. And I was off by 60 cents.
Hey,
I'm not sure how this fits in, but go right ahead.
Well, they say living alone is linked to higher rates of self-reported depression than living with others. This is according to a new National Health Interview Survey. Over 6% of U.S. adults living alone reported feelings of depression compared to just 4% of those who live with others, and this regardless of gender, race, or income level, although the disparity is especially prominent among middle-aged Americans, according to the survey. You got psychologist and author Jenny Tate, who says it's not that living alone is bad for you per se, but there's something about living with another person that can create a little bit of a push to do habits that can improve your mood. Okay, I can dispute that. I mean, I guess I understand that. But I I talk to plenty of people over the years who say, well, and some of these are in long-term relationships. Others, not so much. And they're the ones who said, well, living with another person, not necessarily a good fit. In any event, she says, well, for example, you might keep your home cleaner, put on fresh clothes more often, or I guess that means change your underwear once a day and make regular small talk. Now, a study conducted at a Starbucks highlights the power of casual conversation in combating loneliness. Volunteers in that study were divided into two groups. Group one was instructed to avoid unnecessary conversation, and group two was encouraged to engage in social interaction. Results? Well, people who smiled, made eye contact, had brief conversations first, that had more feelings of positivity and connectedness than those who were, well, as time efficient, the term they use, that is, those who just wanted to get in and get out. Now, connection doesn't have to be about the volume of interaction and number of friends, but it's your mindset says that there are people who care about me. Now, one way Tate recommends people get connected, if you're not, is to sit down and make a list of all the people you know who are probably cheering you on, even from afar. And she says that alone can reduce your loneliness, because loneliness is about the perception that, well, there's no one there for me. Well, by the way, the share of single-person households keeps increasing. It's up 112%, in fact, over the, what's that, a 60-year period, from 13.6% in 1962 to 28.9% in 2022. You know what that means, ladies and gentlemen. Get off your cell phones and TV and get in touch with a family or friend. Or just read a plain book. Me, I love to cuddle with my dog. And that melody is this week's Levity is Golden.
And that's why I have Ruby.
Yeah, buddy. Yeah, buddy.
There was something I was going to say about that, and
there's a lot to say about that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting too about the single persons, because this is what I was thinking about when we get to Japan. Is, you know, that means our young population is decreasing. You know, we have an older population, so you have that many single households, and that's what we see, and that's not good. It's not healthy for a country to not have a. Those young babies coming into the world. So,
yep.
So, well, you know,
growth down the road.
Yep, absolutely. You know, Fed Vice Chair Philip Jefferson, this is the first time he spoke since November. And
he must be lonely
because his key words was talking about the direction of the economy, vigilant and nimble. He's the number two official, the Fed's number two official, and laid out the risks that are keeping him and his policy colleagues supposedly up at night. His talk was, in effect, warning against anyone who wants to believe this year's policy direction is set in stone. It was distinctly not policy triumphalism. His tone emphasized the need to adapt to continuing risks. Looking ahead, he says he sees three key risks. Consumer spending, he said, could be even more resilient. I really find that hard to believe. I don't know how many more credit cards they can create, but that was his first. Second, employment could weaken. And third, the geopolitical risks could remain elevated. And again, with the conflict in the Middle East having a bigger, greater effect on commodity prices. So that's kind of interesting, Dave.
Yeah. He reviewed previous periods when the Fed started cutting interest rates, as it's still expected to do this year, albeit a little later. He noted problems that emerged suddenly and unexpectedly were a frequent catalyst for what he called abrupt policy easing. That included like the Persian Gulf in 1991, September 11th terrorist attacks in 2001, 2007 onset of the Great Recession, and of course, the most recently, the COVID pandemic in 2020. History is replete with events that complicate monetary policy decisions, he said in eloquent Fed speak melody. The message to markets, apparently, no one should think of the Fed as being on autopilot. Oh, goodness. Trust us. Those of us who follow you definitely don't. You overreact on one in one direction and underreact in another. While a handful of rate cuts starting sometime this later spring or summer, or perhaps later, maybe the most likely scenario, Jefferson says there's a wider band of possibilities. He asks, will this time be different? My answer, well, this is him. My answer is, of course it will. Every time is different, but we can still learn from past episodes. Well, let's hope they do, Melody. Indeed, as they say, those who forget the lessons of history are condemned to repeat them.
Well, I think they've already forgotten, or we wouldn't be in the position that we are. Because it has happened to other societies and countries and so forth. So anyway, what saves us is having the world reserve currency for a dollar. That's what really saved us. But you have Turkey's, their central bank, they're going to hold their key interest rate. Hey, they're keeping it at 45%.
Woo-hoo!
Woo-hoo! Gee whiz. Can we invest over there and get 45% on our... No, I'm just saying. I'm just being... Anyway, the move was actually...
Lira.
Pardon?
Just don't buy the lira.
Yeah, really. The move was actually widely expected. Of course, last month... they indicated that its 250 basis point hikes would be the last for the year, and despite inflation. Their inflation is at 65%, so we're probably really happy at what? Really about 11%, 10, 9, 8, somewhere around in there. Consumer prices in the country, not the Fed's number, not the government number, but the real number. Consumer prices in the country of $85 million jumped 6.7% from December. So yeah, they're having a hard time over there, and I don't think anybody's ready to bail them out either. So.
No, I don't see that coming, anytime soon. Well, in another, quick story that, has just part of the whole mixed signal economy, even in the face of stubborn inflation, this survey says small business owners are striking a more positive tone. Optimism surrounding the economy is rising, says the CNBC survey Monkey Small Business Confidence Index, which reached its highest level since early 2021. Now, here's the mixed signals. 28% of small business owners describe the current state of the economy as excellent or good. 28%, a little over one quarter. That means there's, roughly three quarters or more who don't think it's doing so well. But the 28% is up 5 percentage points from the prior quarter and up 18% year over year. Well, their indexes reading of 47 out of 100 marked the highest reading since Joe Biden took office in 2021. Yet I point out that 47 is a tad less than a majority. So how do the others feel? Won't find out in this article anyway. Confidence in the Fed to control inflation is now at 35% among small business owners. And that's the highest it's been since early 2022.
It's pretty low, yeah.
Still far below a majority, Melly, meaning there's a good segment among small business owners that aren't that all optimistic about what's around the corner.
And you know what? We were we mentioned earlier that we're going to talk about Japan's stock market and their bubble burst back in the 1990s, early 1990s. And, you know, it's – and this really shows what zero or negative interest rates can do for a country. I mean, they've been at negative interest rates for how long? They kicked Abe out of there. He was assassinated. And but, hey – they got their stock market to a record high, almost 40,000 a day, and topping the all-time closing high reached in late December of 1989. So when markets drop, look how long it took for it to get back.
3.5 decades, 35 yep. years.
Yep. And we're reaching all these record highs now. So, and we have the debt that we didn't have in the when this was happening in the 90s, and you know the Great Recession and during COVID, all the money that was created. I mean, I don't think they can do it again. Can they really have the quantitative easing that they've had in the past? I mean, they're still doing quantitative easing. People just don't talk about it. So the collapse back then of the Nikkei was a harbinger of what would become a large-scale crash for financial assets, real estate, banking systems. And again, if they begin – when I was reading about their interest rates because they're negative, if they begin raising rates, all of the money that has been going into our treasuries will be moving because there's going to be this repatriation of funds. So, and they're expecting if Japan starts raising the rates. Now, the question is, will they? They do what the U.S. tells them to do, pretty much. So what's going to happen if they don't? Well, then it'll, I don't know, Dave. It's how long can you stay at negative rates?
Yeah, it's I'm surprise. I mean, on the one hand, they haven't crashed. On the other hand, they did move into a recession at the end of 2023.
Yeah.
I think there's going to, and I think soon, I mean, conventional wisdom anyway, should tell you that the central bank of the Bank of Japan is going to have to raise rates ever so modestly, perhaps, to get them out of negative territory, but I don't know. If it's like we often see it here in the U.S. that the Fed won't begin to cut, or they'll cut much sooner if the market, the stock market in particular, starts to take a dive. Similarly, I think thinking, financial thinking, economic thinking is similar in Japan. It's a highly capitalistic society. So the bottom line is that there's just so much uncertainty. There's so much less predictability with how particularly central banks are going to react anymore. Especially in the wealthier countries, wealthy G7 countries like us in Japan. Oof, it's a scary thought. And like NVIDIA occurred in the U.S. today, you know, just the meteoric rise. in its price. You got both Tokyo Electron, which makes semiconductor manufacturing equipment, and chip testing equipment maker Advantest, who is a supplier to NVIDIA and others. I've seen their share prices more than double over the last year. And they have the second and third largest weightings in the Nikkei 225.
Wow.
That's a price-weighted index similar to the Dow Jones in our country.
Wow.
And again, that means their surge has been a major driver in the index's overall increase, similar to our NASDAQ's Magnificent 7. Yeah.
All right, we're at break. We'll be right back.
Purchased and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
One more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody taking care of other client businesses. Final segment. You know where to get her. 1-800-375-4188. Hey, don't kill the messenger here. Love them or hate them, and many of us certainly don't associate the IRS with our love. The nation's wealthiest are evading more than $150 billion a year in taxes, adding to growing government deficits and creating a lack of fairness in the tax system. Those ain't my words. They're IRS Commissioner's Danny Werfel's. Now, the IRS, with billions of dollars in new funding from Congress, has launched a sweeping crackdown on wealthy taxpayers, partnerships, and large companies, it announced. I think it was yesterday. Werfel told CNBC that the agency has launched several programs targeting taxpayers with the most complex returns to root out tax evasion and make sure every taxpayer contributes their fair share. He said, when I look at what we call our tax gap, which is the amount of money owed versus what is paid for, millionaires and billionaires that either don't file or are under-reporting their income are $150 billion of our tax gap, unquote. Werfel claims that a lack of funding at the IRS for years starved it of staff, technology, and resources needed to fund audits, especially at the most complicated and sophisticated returns, which, other things being equal, require more resources. Audits of taxpayers making more than $1 million a year, in fact, fell by more than 80% over the last decade, he says, while the number of taxpayers with income of $1 million or more jumped 50%. Doesn't make sense, but that's what it says. Some Republicans in Congress have ramped up their criticism of the IRS and its expanded enforcement efforts, not just Republicans, but the critics are saying the wave of new audits are going to burden small businesses with unnecessary bureaucracy and years of fruitless investigations and won't raise the promised revenue. Now, I don't know about the latter part of that, but I don't see this burdening small businesses because of, what they've, so, I mean, taking them at their word, yes, I know, could be somewhat naive, but they say they're just going after people, individuals anyway, with $400,000 or more a year in income, and just the largest of businesses. Now, the so-called Inflation Reduction Act the other year gave the IRS an extra $80 billion over several years. Yet the IRS won a deal last year to take $20 billion of that funding back for other purposes, and now they're pressing for additional cuts. Now, the Treasury Department estimated last week greater IRS enforcement will result in an additional $561 billion in revenue between this year and 10 years out. The IRS, which is a part of Treasury, says that for every extra dollar spent on enforcement, the agency raises about $6 in revenue. Werfel noted that it's identified 1,600 millionaire taxpayers who failed to pay at least $250,000 each in assessed taxes. Now, so far, the IRS collected more than, is it 480? It says billion, but I wonder if that's a million from the group. I'm guessing 480 million from the group. It says we are still going. Again, yesterday, the agency announced a program, a newer program, to audit owners of private jets. Watch out, you professional golfers, who may be using their planes, they say, for personal travel and not accounting for their trips or taxes properly. Presumably, you know, deducting as a business expense their personal travel. Werfel said that for some companies and owners, the tax deduction from corporate jets can amount to tens of millions of dollars every year. Another area he said is potentially rife with evasion is these so-called limited partnerships, adding that many wealthy individuals have been shifting their income to the business entities, these LPs as they're known as, to avoid income taxes. Well, we'll see what happens. We'll certainly stay in the loop on this and tell you what we find as the months go on this year. Hey, most companies involved in the world's largest trial of a four-day work week, and this will have Melody up in arms if she's listening, have made the policy permanent, according to a new report. Of the 61 British companies that took part in a six-month pilot in 2022, 89% said the policy was still in place. 51% said they'd permanently switch to a four-day work week. The companies involved were invited to take part in a follow-up study 1 year on from the world's biggest trial of a shorter working week, at least to date. The results published yesterday by the think tank Autonomy showed that all the consulted project managers and CEOs said a four-day work week had a positive impact on their organization. 55%, in fact, describing the impact as very positive. Juliet Shore, the report's author and sociology professor at Boston College, said the findings showed the positive effects of shorter working hours were real and long-lasting, adding that overall results have held and in some cases have even continued to improve. You know, she noted that physical and mental health and work-life balance are significantly better. Burnout and life satisfaction improvements held steady. The report found, however, that staff in firms where the additional day off was only weekly guaranteed or provided on the condition of meeting certain targets had some concerns. For example, four-day work week models that were highly conditional resulted in some staff reporting added stress to meet deadlines, resentment against fellow employees, and feelings of inequity between employees based on the nature of their job. The report added that less committed forms of the four-day week policy also left staff less able to plan activities for their extra day off. In general, the report said employees tended to use their day off for caring responsibilities, hobbies, and chores, and to prioritize quality time for their traditional weekend. Interesting. One quick filler piece here, just browsing real quickly, some headlines. U.S. Justice Department reports that the nation's prison population rose over 2% in 2022, the first increase in almost a decade. Despite years of declines, the U.S. prison population remains extremely high compared to the era before the war on drugs and tough on crime politics. 1.23 million Americans were in state or federal prison in 2022, according to the DOJ. That's up from 1.21 million in 2021, but down from 1.57 million in 2012. Now, incarcerated populations grew the most in Mississippi, where they're up 14%, Montana up 9%, and Colorado up 8%. That's between 21 and 22. You got Virginia at minus 10, Oregon at minus 5.2, and California at minus 4 shrank the most. Let's talk about AI. Artificial intelligence makers' desperate need for millions of powerful chips took center stage yesterday and again today. World's most valuable chip maker reported another quarter of massive revenue growth, and longtime leader Intel reported progress on rejuvenating its operations, manufacturing primarily. Now, NVIDIA's fortunes have soared along with demand for its chips to train and run AI systems, but the rest of the semiconductor industry stands to get a major boost from AI as well. Intel, which once reserved nearly all its chip-making capacity for its own processors, is in the midst of a pricey gamble to transform itself into a credible contract manufacturing rival to Taiwan-based TSMC, which makes chips for firms that design them, like NVIDIA. At a recent event in California, Intel said it already has orders worth $15 billion for its foundry business and is on track to be the number two chip foundry by the end of this decade. At the same time, NVIDIA reported another blowout quarter. Revenues there up more than triple from just a year ago, more than $22 billion. And listen to this, per share earnings up 765%. NVIDIA CEO Jensen Huang said generative AI has reached a tipping point, saying demand is surging worldwide across companies, industries, and nations. NVIDIA said that U.S. chip export controls directed at limiting China's access to advanced tech had actually minimal impact on its business. The company hyped expectations around its newest chip called the H200, which will ship, by June 30th this year, with the promise of nearly double the performance of the AI's current favorite, the H100. Now, OpenAI CEO Sam Altman, who was also at the Intel event, is seeking trillions of dollars for a major new chip production effort. Altman declined to confirm the Wall Street Journal's report that he's seeking an astounding $7 trillion for his new chip venture, but admitted that the numbers will be big. The rise of generative AI has Intel CEO Pat Gelsinger feeling pretty good about his decision to double down on manufacturing. He asks, what are we going to do with all those fabrications? I think we're going to be building an awful lot of AI chips because overall demand appears to be insatiable for the need for computing for several years into the future. Estimates that the chip industry would grow to $1 trillion a year, once seen as aggressive, now look like that might be way too conservative. The semiconductor industry is about half of that. 2023 sales estimated about $523 billion around the world. Now, the typically cyclical industry was famously short in supply during the early days of the pandemic, when car production lines had literally had to be halted because of a lack of semiconductors. Well, Gelsinger said Intel's ready to meet the demand with its plans for new plants in Ohio and Germany. But he also says we're going to have to build monster data centers, and we're going to have lots of energy sources with lots of semiconductors. Experts say the surging chip demand comes amid an effort to diversify an industry whose manufacturing has become highly concentrated in Taiwan and South Korea, where almost all of the most advanced chips are made today. The U.S. has begun pouring billions to increase domestic chip productions via the CHIPS and Science Act, with similar efforts taking place in some of the European countries. Intel trotted out an intriguing mix of former rivals turned partners, including executives from ARM, Broadcom, and MediaTek. Intel also announced a deal for its companies to manufacture chips designed by Microsoft. Likely, they say, that generative AI's growth will be linear and without ups and downs. And even Intel acknowledges that most of its manufacturing capacity for the next couple of years will be used by its own chips. Though Gelsinger said he would like to see NVIDIA, Qualcomm, and even longtime rival AMD building chips at Intel factories. So AI is driving up demand, but it's also helping speed at least part of the process of making chips. At Intel's event, software firms like Cadence and Synopsys talked about how they're using AI to help automate parts of the chip design and to make it easier for companies to move production from, say, TSMC in Taiwan to Intel, or vice versa. Intel's chief global operations officer said that AI is also reshaping the way the company factories are run, from monitoring temperature to designing chips and packaging. It's that last area, the packaging of chips, where Intel is already seeing its strongest initial demand from other semiconductor firms. We live in a new and evolving, ever-evolving world, ladies and gentlemen. Let's just hope that this desire to fund the advancement of AI isn't the last thing we do as a global society. Hey, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody will be back tomorrow with Butch to close out the week. Also be on the lookout for our weekly What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog in the morning. Thanks always to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good evening. Bye-bye. Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.